Hi everyone, welcome to the Bold Beautiful Borderline podcast. My name is Lori and I am super, super excited to be joined today by Steve, Mary Rose, and Duncan. Steve and Mary Rose are Connor's parents, who you heard in our previous episode, and Duncan is Connor's brother, who he clearly admires very much. It's very, very cute. Really looking forward to hearing their side of the story that we just heard from Connor in the last episode. And I just want to highlight that Connor's not on this episode, but he was the one who actually asked that his parents and brother could be involved. So he has given full permission for them to talk about him on this episode. And if anything, thought it was like incredibly important for their story to be shared because they've been such incredible supports for him. So with that, I'm going to ask them each to kind of introduce themselves and just share a little bit about whatever they think is relevant. And then we'll kind of get into it. So Steve, maybe I'll start with you.
Well, I'm Steve. I'm Connor's father, but I was also his teacher for a while. So I've got a unique window on Connor's world, I guess. So I saw him by day and by night.
Very unique. And that was what grade?
Well, I was in a couple of schools with Connor, so I taught K through 8. I never taught him directly. I was his teacher librarian.
Yeah, so K through 8, that's when a lot of things are like developing in people and not necessarily before we've like figured out exactly what's kind of going a little haywire, shall we say. So that's super interesting. And Mary Rose, how about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Mary Rose. Obviously, I'm Connor's mom. And, you know, our family wasn't, I guess, maybe your typical family. I worked in a pretty high-end job as the director of IT in a number of different organizations. So Steve ended up being the primary caregiver in our house. He had the kids, you know, he took the kids to school and brought them home because they were in the same school or the same location that he was. So that was maybe a little bit of a different environment, but obviously we've all had 27 wonderful years with Connor and some maybe not totally wonderful.
I was going to say, I was like, that seems very optimistic, but I'll take it.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a special kid. He's got days that I love him to pieces, but don't like his behavior. And, you know, that's the way it goes.
Totally. And that's a beautiful approach to it. So Duncan, how about yourself?
Hi, I'm Dunk. I've had the benefit of being very, very close to Connor growing up. Like we're like a year and a half apart. So like we might as well be twins, and my parents pretty much raised us exactly the same way. So it's interesting because he's kind of, I won't get into it too much because I'm sure there'll be time later to talk about it, but we're very opposite people. He's like really is the yin to my yang. I'm a very kind of relaxed and chill person by nature. But what I will say is he's one of my best friends and continues to be, and I've loved him to death since day one, but that's just how it is.
And are you older then?
No, I'm
you're
the
younger
brother.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I get that a lot though. It's weird.
Yeah, no, I totally thought you were the older brother.
Man needs to learn how to grow a beard.
No kidding. I am so happy to have your perspective on this show. Siblings, especially I think younger siblings, have often experienced a lot of trauma at our hands. And I'm an older sibling. I'm not going to go into the details, but I can assure you that I have a particular heart for the siblings of people with borderline, especially as we're really figuring out who we are and what's going on with us. That can take a toll on family members. And I think especially siblings. So the fact that you're here and just such a big support of him and his best friend, that's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I won't lie to you. It's been like, there's definitely been things that I've noticed about myself in regards to Connor, but I'm sure we'll get into that later.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. And I mean, it's never a walk in the park with any siblings, but I think with BPD in particular, it's just, there's a lot of additional layers that can come up. So just for all of you, I'm curious, what did mental health look like in your family? Like, is there a lot of family history, a lot of discussion, or was this kind of like Connor was a weird anomaly that had mental health challenges that you were unfamiliar with?
You know, we're from a almost Hollywood white bread family, honest to goodness. No divorce or very, very few divorces in the family. By and large, I like all my family.
That's a lot. You know,
my parents stayed together up until my father's death. My grandparents stayed together. My great-grandparents stayed together. We're not a large family. Mary Rose's family is considerably larger. She's got eight children in her family. I'm the eldest of four. But if anything, our family is probably unusually boring in its lack of stress, in its lack of disagreement. And one of the things we did struggle with is, how's Connor doing? Oh, so what's Connor doing now? Oh, how are things going with Connor? And I've struggled with guilt. I've struggled with what to say. I've struggled with having to realize that Connor's expectations are not my expectations. But from a family standpoint, Connor really is, in a lot of respects, an outlier.
Yeah, and that's hard. I think my family's definitely not normal by any stretch, but but I know that my mom really struggled with the fact that I wasn't fitting the normal mold that I was expected to fit in. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's hard when you're asking, like, how is somebody? And it's like, well, actually, they're kind of a train wreck at the moment. But how do you explain that to especially like grandparents and stuff, where like this wasn't really talked about? How do you really kind of get into that? So Mary Rose, one of eight, that's a big family.
Yeah. So I'm the baby of eight. And I would say, you know, certainly we didn't have a lot of knowledge. Certainly had never heard of borderline personality disorder when our kids were young, or when Connor was growing up. That was not something that we were even familiar with. Having said that, he actually has a cousin who is also BPD. She's quite a bit older than he is. So, but again, all of these things were new to us. Connor was diagnosed. I will agree and disagree with some of the things Connor said. He was diagnosed ADHD very early, grade one. I think he was seven. We put him into an anger management course, I think, when he was in grade three or four. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, it was, yeah, he, there was a program that was being run by a psychiatrist he was seeing at that time for kids. And so, you know, some of these issues were recognized young. He was not diagnosed BPD as early as in my recollection, I think he was at least 18 when he was diagnosed, not 16. But having said that, I think he was actually 18 or 19. I'm not quite sure exactly when we got that officially diagnosed, but things certainly, you know, I would say he was very quote unquote normal in our thoughts until about grade seven. I mean, he had his issues, but I just sort of thought it was normal development probably until about, oh, I don't know, grade 9 or 10, things really, really started to go off the rails for him. And we went through some rough years, absolutely, for sure.
And did you notice like an event that triggered this in him?
You know, Connor is very bright. He was also designated gifted, you know, amongst everything else. In fact, most of the help that he got through school was based on the fact that he had a gifted designation, not based on his ADHD or anything or his behavior, but more that. And yet most of his accommodations that he got through school were anything but for the giftedness. It was for all the other stuff. When he hit grade 10, I think he was so able to knock it out of the park without doing any work whatsoever, or applying himself or focusing in any way. He could just do it. And then things really started to, I think when things started to get tough for him, and he also was a kid that tried everything early as well. You know, he tried, you know, he had girlfriends early. He, you know, he experimented with sex early. He experimented, I think, with drugs and alcohol early, earlier than many kids normally would, which I don't know what normal is exactly, but I would say he was ahead of his peers in terms of that. So I would say there was one event in high school where he was really, I think was really traumatic for him, where he was sort of, he mentioned that he was in a special program with a math science technology program, and he was not, I think he got kind of kicked out of a friends group. I don't even remember all the circumstances around it. Steve might, but I think that really, really started him on a different path that was not a good thing.
He got excluded from a gamers group.
Yeah.
I can remember how upset he was about it.
It was traumatic for him.
And unusual for Connor, it wasn't an event. It lasted. It went on. And he really felt like he'd been... Now, I don't know that that was the trigger. But
no, it's what I remember really started. Things started to turn a corner. They asked him not to be part of that group anymore because he was not... you know, focusing and wasn't able to kind of keep up, and they felt he was dragging them down. So he got asked to step down, and things really took a turn.
There were a couple of parents that were behind the kids that really didn't like Connor.
Yeah.
You know, Connor was a bad influence, you know, and it was painfully obvious to him that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that sense of rejection, I mean, people with borderline have like pretty high rejection sensitivity. So
yeah, that sense of abandonment, I think that's where that really kicked in for him.
That's interesting. I'm very glad I asked that question, because that's like a trigger that you wouldn't necessarily think of. But the fact that both of you remember that as an event that seems to have at least like exacerbated symptoms enough that it's clear in your mind, and this was obviously a very long time ago.
Yeah, and you know, and a lot of people, you know, you read a lot of books about borderline, which and everybody says, you know, it's brought on by trauma or childhood trauma, and I mean, really, Connor had a storybook childhood. Really, he didn't, you know, he wasn't abused. He came from a, you know, I think a pretty good home. He had a lot of advantages that other kids don't have. He had a supportive family, but some events that happened to him were traumatic for him. And a lot of my family is like, well, what, you know, what's his problem? Where's the trauma in his life? And I was like, well, I don't know if you appreciate how emotionally damaging that was for some of those events were for him.
Yeah. And I think
he got rejected from several peer groups, which I think really stuck with him.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know, Dunk, if you remember those days.
I mean, it's so funny because, like, I think I was having a fair bit of trouble around this same time. And what I've learned, like, through my own therapy exercises is that I'm one of those people that just, like, my mind will block it out if it's painful for me. A lot of those years, like, there was a lot of screaming matches and a lot of stuff at home that I didn't want to be around. So like, I tried to spend a lot of time at my buddy Liam's place, and like, I didn't really want to be there. And to be honest, like, I still have trouble remembering a lot of that stuff. And I think that's also partially on my parents' behalf. Like, they did a lot to try and shield me from that. And I, you know, I appreciate it, but I just, it's tough for me to remember all the details of it. I know.
Yeah, Duncan and Connor didn't go to the same high school either, so he wasn't necessarily in the same crowd. And they were they were 20 months apart in birth, but they were actually 2 years apart in school. So that all happened in grade 10. Duncan was still in grade school, so that doesn't surprise me. But you get that trait from your mother of blocking out all the bad things, because there's a lot of bad things that honestly I. I struggle to remember because that is also my coping mechanism.
Our brains are incredibly powerful when they need to be. And that's survival, mm-hmm. right? Sorry, do you go by Dunk or Duncan? Do you care what I call you?
I go by like Duncan, but I prefer Dunk. I think it's easier to say and it's short, sweet.
Okay, I'll call you Dunk then, if that's cool.
Sweet, yeah.
So did you ever feel when you were kind of growing up that you were not necessarily getting the same amount of attention as Connor was? And did that ever like kind of cause any resentment?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like there was a, like, that's my main point. Like when I go to therapy is that like for a long time, like I really did not feel like a main character in my own life. It's mm-hmm. nothing, like it's no discredit to anyone. I know because I grew up so close to Connor that from day one, you know, he was mentally ill. Like, I don't care what like anybody says, like all of those traits, it was really more of a nature versus nurture thing. Because again, we were raised exactly the same way. We're both treated pretty fairly by my parents, but you know, at a certain point in life, like my brother needed the attention, he needed the help. And to me, I was born with a lot less struggles than he was. So like, it's not really a fair comparison. I've been able to succeed in my life mainly because of my supports and again, my lack of mental illness. But yeah, that has been a huge struggle for me for a long time. Even at family gatherings, you know, it would be Connor and Duncan, you know, it would be like, my name is a punctuation mark to that guy's sentence. Like, and I didn't get asked about, I didn't get like, nobody bothered like checking up on me. And yeah, for sure. That was very hurtful, but I don't really resent anybody now in my adult life because of it. Like I've definitely gotten over that kind of attention issue, but I'm still working on the deeper trauma and trying to get rid of some of those like glitches. Like I have a hard time standing up for myself and establishing healthy boundaries with like friends and relationships because of it. Which is again a recent development. Part of the reason, if I'm perfectly honest, like I'm in BC is because it's really hard to develop yourself when someone like that is so close to you. And again, I miss my family dearly. They mean the world to me, and especially my brother. But yeah, you really do eventually, as someone in my situation, if I can give anybody some tips who's in a similar situation, find your own path, go and do something for yourself, go and learn something new, go somewhere else for a little while. You don't have to stay away from your family forever, but you got to do something.
Yeah, distance is so important.
Like I would say it doesn't have to be extreme. Like I'm not like, I know that that's a very extreme case. And like my brother and I have always been on good terms, like because I'm such a relaxed person, I think he finds me a very comfortable person to be around because my energy level's like down here and his is up here. You know, I kind of force him to meet me here. I don't know if that makes any sense. Like,
totally. My husband is that person in my life. He's so chill.
And that's it. And that's, you know, I think my personality type just happened to be from birth very well meshing with Connor. Like we very rarely fought. If I ever had any trouble at school, anything like, and this is, again, touching on something that Connor said in the last episode, like the good parts about BPD is that that guy from the very beginning of time has loved me like nobody else will ever love me. You know, that guy, like he's stuck up for me all the time. He's had my back since day one. He was out there with his long teased hair and emo skinny jeans and band tees beating up Greek kids for me. It's insane. I don't know what to tell you. He's the most loyal person you will ever meet in your entire life. If you show him even an ounce of the respect that he will show you from day one, you'll have a friend forever. And yeah, does he have annoying traits and he talks over you and he's, you know, here and there and everywhere? For sure. But you know what? You will never find a better friend than that guy. Not even once.
Oh, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because it's hard a lot of the time, I think, when you've been like enmeshed in it, to see the positives, right? And so the fact that you can is just really beautiful and emotional for me.
So we tried to involve Duncan, you know, on an informative or an intellectual basis all along. You know, here's what's going on, here are the things we're trying, here's what we're trying to do. Where it was appropriate, of course, you know, Duncan at 7 and Duncan at 25 are different creatures of technology. But it's impossible to fill in that emotional, you know, and we can't tell him, we can't even really probably adequately explain how we're feeling when we were trying to, I'm going to say, fix Connor, because for an awful lot of my life I tried to fix him. And one of the best things that happened to me is I've realized he wasn't broken, you know, and so the only thing I could work on, the only thing I could fix is me. And so that's what I've worked on for the last little while. But in Duncan's case, I'm not even sure we have the language to explain the emotions that go behind it, what have you. So all we tried to do was just be honest with him and explain to him. Sometimes, Duncan, we just can't give you the time we'd like to, because quite frankly, we're fighting a fire. And you know, he took that, but that's not always a satisfying answer, particularly when you're younger. I mean, now he can intellectualize it, but how do you have that conversation with an 11-year-old?
Without them feeling like they're the second priority, which is not at all the case, right? But
right.
You got to, yeah, put out the fire before it burns the entire house down. Yeah, this is very, I wish I could talk more about my family's dynamic, but I can't, because this is so incredibly emotional to think about just how you've been able to continue maintaining relationships with this level of, I don't even, like, dysfunction is not a good word, but like level of shit show, I guess, is like maybe a better word.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah. Do you have just the two kids then?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And now Duncan touched on something very important,
mm-hmm.
and that is distance. You know, and one of the things that we did do is leave Toronto, come to Peterborough, and find Connor his own place to live. Because so he's close, we can support him, we see him, we can talk to him, we can help, but he can sort out his life,
yeah.
and deal with it his way, and we can sort out our life, and that's way better than living on top of each other. It really is.
Totally.
Yeah, we bought a big house here in Peterborough, and Connor had a little apartment off the back. And we did that for about a year. But it still wasn't, honestly, it still wasn't enough, because, you know, we've come to accept that Connor will never live the way we live. And that's okay. That's his journey and that's his life. And those are the ways he chooses to live. But we had a very hard time, you know, being okay with it when we were seeing it every day. And Connor, you know, as you mentioned, has still got some pretty big issues in his life that I hope one day he finds the strength to deal with, but it's kind of hard to watch some days, you know, and that's the truth. And I still struggle.
Is that specifically like the alcohol component, or are there other things that are hard for you to kind of be around all the time?
I mean, we are very neat, tidy, put everything in its place kind of people. And Connor is definitely not that either. So that is just on a very superficial level. Connor is, you know, he is not a super clean, like put everything away kind of guy. And that's, again, that's okay. So he likes to live, and we try to be okay with that.
But when it's your own house, space. Yeah, exactly.
But when it's our house, we have we bought a second property, which we rent partially to Connor, and partially to others. So it is still our house in some degree, but we don't live on top of him. So that was a hugely, I mean, we were very fortunate that we were in a financial position to do that. It's certainly not something that every family could could do, but it worked out for us just because we left Toronto and came to a much smaller community, and we were able to do that. But
and how old was he when you made that change?
Oh, only 5 years
ago. It was only 5 years ago. So he was 21, 22 when we came to Peterborough. And yeah, and we moved him into his own place. But a year after we came. So that would have been, I think it was 2020.
He did live on his own in Toronto for a little over a year. And that's when he had the issue with his ill-fated girlfriend, which he still mourns.
Yeah,
you know, that was a very tough time
for him, for sure.
And so we helped by subsidizing the apartment to let him try it. I think the one thing that's missing from this whole conversation is it was better for us because Connor tolerates more chaos than we do, I think is the best way to put it. He lives a more in the moment life than we do, less planned in the moment. And that's fine. We're much older than he is and we're different people. But giving him just 5 kilometers distance means he can deal with his problems as he sees fit, and he can rise to challenges as he sees fit rather than us fixing them. And that's a really important thing for us to release that hold and let him do it.
Yeah, that's something I actually wanted to pick up on from your interview with Connor, because I made a couple of notes when Sarah was talking about her experience of having her mom as a teacher and never living up and potentially feeling that way. And I said to Steve just in the little break, I said, something occurred to me that I don't know that I've ever completely thought about fully, is that Steve was a teacher in the school where Connor was a student. And I think because of the credibility that Steve already had as a teacher, Connor actually didn't get written off as just a bad kid or a behavioral kid because of Steve's credibility in the school. Like they knew who Steve was. They knew he was not, a negligent a bad parent that just wasn't looking after their kids and didn't set any boundaries or didn't, have rules or what have you. So because he had that credibility, I think that Connor got a lot more acceptance for his exceptionalities. And Steve also has taught spec ed as well and had, a lot of good grounding. So that never really occurred to me, but I think actually for Connor, we were able to open a lot of doors, keep a lot of doors open that might have been shut in his face if he'd been a different kid from a different family. And in fact, we probably saved him too often from failure and not experiencing the full impact of some of the things that he did and said. We probably in some ways did him a bit of a disservice in that way, because we kept saving him. And we've since, we took family connections through Sash Bear when it was very new in Canada, probably at CAMH. I think it was the first or second one that CAMH ever ran in Toronto and Lynn was, one of our facilitators who's it goes back a bit. But we then joined a group called HOPE, which is helping other parents everywhere. And if there's any parents listening to this that are parents of BPD teens or young adults, it's a group that has helped us tremendously. It has a lot of similar skills that we teach to DBT. And, and as Steve said, we've done a lot of accepting that this is Connor's journey and this is Connor's life. We can change only our own behavior. We can't change him and we can't change his behavior. We can only set our boundaries. We can only change the way we react to his behavior. And by doing so over time, and it took time, we've been with HOPE now 6.5 years and still go back to help other parents. And it's completely peer led, run by parents, similar kind of to your Super Feelers Club. And we deal with kids of all different, not all are BPD. Some are ADHD. Some are just, some have a variety of different diagnoses. Some have no diagnoses. They're just parents who are struggling with the behavior of the young people in their lives, is how we phrase it. So it's been incredibly helpful for us. And I wanted to put a shout out to people. It's on the web. You can find us.
I'll put the link in the notes too, because these groups are so helpful for people. I mean, we hear, you know, lots of people talk about Sash Bear, but a lot of people that are involved in Sash Bear are also involved in like so many other parent groups that are so helpful.
And Sash Bear was wonderful, but Sash Bear is 8 or 10 weeks or however long it is. And then it ends. And then you learn all these skills, but sometimes in the moment, you don't get a chance to really practice them. And then it's 3 months later when you're like, oh, yeah, you know. So what's helpful about HOPE is we meet every week. It's weekly, and we get to chat and talk to parents. And then you get to sort of say, discuss sort of on the spot, this is the situation I'm in. And we all kind of work on those skills together and help each other out. And we're not professionals, but we've had people who have said that they've struggled for years and with different groups. And I think we've been able to help a lot. And it's not for everybody. Doesn't work for everybody, of course, but it's been helpful for us.
From my personal journey, of all of the things I've tried, and I identified Connor as having some exceptionalities at about age 4. And it just took, he needed to get older before we could put labels on any of those things and get appropriate designations and appropriate supports. But I struggled a lot with Connor. And when Connor talks about going to nose-to-nose, that it was with me. Yeah. And there, he would drive me out of the house because I'd reached the point where I was afraid that I was going to do something that I would regret. And I'm still ashamed of many of those episodes that I couldn't manage and I couldn't have a solution. But what HOPE has led me to is that the only person I can work on is me. The only behavior I can change is mine. And Connor's responsible to change his behavior. I'm responsible to validate it. And to do my best to understand it. Doesn't mean I have to agree with it. Doesn't mean and absolutely that my son is not broken. I had this mistaken idea that I could fix my son. I mean, I'm an educator. I can do these things. And what I really had to come to the conclusion was my son's not broken. He's just different from me.
Yeah.
And there's room in this world for that. And so the best thing that came to me with HOPE was, you know, stop wasting your time and spend time on yourself. And that's what I did. And so I actually, it made me a more effective teacher as well. It made me look at every child more as an individual and less as one of 30 in a group.
Oh, I have no doubt. And you probably were starting to see patterns that you had never really identified as like differences that, you know, aren't just people being bad kids. I mean, I'm 29, Connor's 27, he said, 28, 27.
Yeah, 27.
I mean, I was definitely labeled a bad kid. I was put in anger management and shockingly, anger management didn't work because you know why? It wasn't because I was just an angry human. It's because I was having emotion regulation challenges that nobody was addressing, right? And so like, once you realize why you're having these behaviors and you can start addressing that cause, of course, things are going to be able to improve. And I think just, you know, talking about the enabling, or I don't know if you used that word, but like, you can't fix another person, right? And just like, I can't fix anybody else, even if they're not broken by, you know, society's definition. But what I do encourage parents to do is, while you can't like force a kid to go to therapy, you can't force them to change, you can't force them to stop using drugs, none of those things are ever going to be beneficial, because then they're going to be like, well, fuck you, I'm not going to do what you say, I'm going to do it harder the other direction. Been there.
Yep.
But if you have like the means to be in a situation where you're like, if you ever decide you want therapy, you let me know and I will support you to find it, or I will support you to pay for it, right? Like, if we can remove barriers that allow people to do it when they're in the moment and they actually want to change, that's the best way that we can support people. Easier said than
absolutely.
Done.
Absolutely. Yeah. We sent Connor to rehab.
Residential.
Residential for 6 weeks and a great personal expense. And I think it lasted about 2 weeks or what, maybe 1 or 2 weeks before he relapsed. And after that, we sort of said, no, we're not going to do that again until Connor comes to us and said that that's what he needs and what he wants. And at which point I would do anything in my power to help him. But until that day comes, until Connor decides he wants to do this for himself, I don't think that anything that we do or say is going to make a difference. And, you know, it was hard to hear Sarah say, you know, she had to fall apart completely. And I hope that that's not, you know, I hope that that's not the path that Connor has to take, but it might be. I still don't know the end of that journey yet.
Well, and you also don't know what rock bottom looks like to people, right? I mean, it sucks that we have to get there, but, you know, him falling off that cliff could have been the rock bottom that started shifting the way that his life was, right? I mean,
if you saw where he fell, quite literally rock bottom.
Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, I hope at that point that it would be a wake up call, but I think he was still too young, unfortunately, mm-hmm. when that happened. But anyway, that's.
We're as equally frank with Connor as we are with you right now.
Yeah.
You know, he's had this conversation.
We've had this conversation,
and,
for sure.
And every once in a while, I just let him know how much I love him and that if he needs something, we're here to support that. But we're no longer going to push those things. Those are options. Those are not requirements. And that's not to say we don't have boundaries. We absolutely have boundaries because we have lives that are of value to us, and we have exactly the same rights to those lives that Connor has in his life. So there's a difference between a boundary and forcing someone on something on someone. And Connor's intelligent enough and old enough and mature enough and emotionally mature enough to make his own decisions. And it's taken me a long time to not only come to that realization, but to embrace it.
Yeah, I mean, we all think that people who make different decisions than us are weird or like making like strange decisions. Decided. Yeah, you're like, you know, we in dialectical behavior therapy, you talk about like non-judgment. Well, that's a lot easier said than done, right? And we all judge people all the time. We judge ourselves, we judge strangers, we judge our family. But yeah, to realize like, well, I actually physically can't make somebody do something they don't want to do. So why am I spending my effort and energy trying to force something that isn't possible?
Yeah, that's why, like, I think it was so easy for me. Like, obviously I selectively remember things, but I think that's why, like, because I wasn't my brother's parent, that like I was able to like enjoy our relationship a little bit more. Like, he just, yeah, like all the fun stuff I got to do with Connor, and I never, like, I wasn't really in charge of governing him or anything like that. Like, and you know what, I think even from a young age I actually valued his different perspective on things. Like, I even my friends nowadays, they've all got ADHD, and it's probably because I grew up with my brother, but like I just find those people have interesting brains. They have like, there's some cool stuff going on up there that isn't going on in my brain. So it's, I don't know. I thought that was always a trait that I really valued about the guy, is that I was never 100% sure what he was thinking. He always had some cool perspectives on things.
Oh, it's never a dull moment with us, that's for sure. Sometimes that makes it very exhausting though.
So we've talked a little bit about my relationship with Connor as a teacher. And that was a double-edged sword, because it allowed me to advocate for Connor. I knew the system. You know, very quickly on, I had an IEP for him, and we had accommodations that were of value to him. But by the same token, when the announcements went out, would Steve please come down to the office? And I knew why. I need to go out and go talk to my son who's sitting on the tree outside and threatening he's going to run away. And you know, I can laugh at it now, but it wasn't laughable. It was, I, I valued my career. I had a view of myself that, and I felt the need to explain my son's actions, and I felt a fair bit of shame and grief around that. And I don't know, but I did. And so even though I was there and I could deal with the situation and I could de-escalate things, that was all too good. But the cost was that I was doing that instead of the other things I should have been doing as a teacher. And it also, I'm going to say the school took advantage of it, because it became easier for them to have me deal with that dysregulation than deal with it, because I could.
Right. They wouldn't have called a parent to come in to deal with the dysregulation, but you were just literally there.
Yeah. Right. But you also gave teachers insight into Connor. I remember, you know, his grade one teacher used to have a closet or a place where Connor could go when he was feeling, you know, and she let him go there. And she sort of knew that when he needed to get out, he needed to get out, and he only needed 5 minutes, and he came back. And
when he got dysregulated, he couldn't stand anybody seeing him.
No, that's right. He used to go into the closet.
And so his teacher actually had some pillows in a closet. He could go in and he could pull the door closed, because then nobody could see him.
Yeah.
And that's such a
was an okay strategy. It worked for Connor. He didn't see it as a punishment and it wasn't a punishment. It was you take the 5 minutes you need to pull yourself together and then you come back. And I think some of those things inform some when Steve was teaching Spec Ed, he had a child who was ADHD and couldn't sit still. And one of my favorite, you know, he used to sit back in his chair and put the chair back on two legs, and Steve was very afraid he was going to get hurt. So he came up with this idea to put elastic bands around the foot of the chair, and he gave this child
on his desk, right?
So he gave this child these elastic bands he could push his feet against and just sit there. And that was just enough to work off that energy. And, you know, his parents just thought this was the most brilliant thing that had ever been done. And it was such a simple strategy. But you know what? It worked for that child. So yeah, I think
I had to do to every kid's desk.
Every kid wanted.
Your elastic band budget went up like crazy.
I bought a bunch of elastic stool. Fine.
But you know what? Those are the kinds of things that the accommodations that are simple but, you know, effective for kids, and totally. I think are often missed.
And do you still work in the school system, Steve?
No, I'm very fortunate that I chose to retire the year before COVID.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
because I couldn't do what I used to do. I mean, my teaching was a performance art. I had lots of kids all the time in a library with my own curriculum, and I couldn't do that online.
So, well, I'm very glad that that timing worked out for you.
Just one quick thing is that, like, I think that, again, this is just an overarching thing, but I think the education system doesn't often let kids do, like, it only really is geared towards people that are like audio visual learners. And I feel like most of the people I know with ADHD, and Connor too, like, he learns pretty kinesthetic. Like, he likes to touch things. And even if it's not his main learning style, it's still something that helps him stay stimulated enough to stay engaged in the classroom. And societally, for the last like 20, 30 years, parents have been telling their kids, they're like, oh, don't go into trade school. That's where you break your knees before you make a living. But like, it's good money now.
I was going to say, I have a master's degree and I probably make less money than you will in a year. So
there you go. Honors training to be a welder. We're both kind of, I would be surprised if I didn't have some sort of deficit disorder, because I have a hard time sitting down in class too. And like, it's, you know, what I would say to the parents out there is maybe just consider that sending that kid with ADHD to go and get your master's, let them go mess around in trade school. They pay you to be there. You get to walk around. Connor in his welding class was encouraged to like make his own little projects and do his own little things after he was done his assignments. So like, just consider that after you get through high school, there are other options for those kids.
Totally. And like, I mean, my friends, most of us didn't go to trade school, actually. Like, none of my really good friends did. And we often regret that decision because, honestly, the people that did go into trades, they, in what, 3-4 years, were making an actual living and could afford to buy a house before the market went insane. Like, all of these things that a lot of us who were kind of like plugging away through academia didn't necessarily get to. And I mean, I love school. I'm a total nerd. It's my favorite. I will go back to school in a heartbeat. But, you know, everybody learns differently and it's totally valid. And also sometimes, like, if you just haven't found your passion yet, it's a lot harder to focus on it. Even Connor said that in the last episode. Like, he's like, yeah, my ADHD makes me, you know, kind of like hard to focus. But once I find the thing I want to focus on, my God, am I going to focus on it? And if that can be something that you're going to do for the rest of your life, that's awesome.
I wanted to add one more thing. It was sticking in the back of my head when Mary Rose was talking about hope. Because I would say that we've tried many, many both self-help and group situations to try to learn about Connor and learn how to support him. But what is probably unique about hope is we're not there to do anything except improve the relationship with your young person. That's what the mandate of hope is. So it's not about fixing. It's not about, you know, trying to put you onto the right resources or what have you. It's just so that somehow you can tolerate at least, so you can build a relationship that works for both of you. And that's what it's all about. And that's been the most effective thing for me, because I'll tell you, half a dozen years ago, there were times when I just really wanted Connor in my life because it was exhausting and it was overwhelming and it took every bit of energy I had. And now what I have instead is a pretty good relationship with my son, an understanding that he has his path and I have mine. And I like him a lot better. I think that's the best thing to say. I just like him a lot better. I appreciate him more. I mean, I always loved him, but there were a lot of times I didn't much like him.
Totally.
And so what I found really effective about hope was it didn't work on any of those things. It worked on me and my relationship with him. That was very helpful to me. And
what you can control, right? What you can control in that relationship, right? Not what you can make the other person do, which is so important. So I know that you have all been really impactful in Connor's life in one way or another. And I think, Mary Rose, you're the reason Connor found Super Feelers. Is that correct?
Well, we went to a Sash Bear. We still support Sash Bear, and they have their webinar series. And you guys were there, I don't know, a few months back. And when I heard about the Super Feelers Club, I was like, I got to put Connor onto this. I wonder if he'd, you know, find this helpful. And so he actually tried to get into the May one, but he didn't pre-register and didn't realize that he had So yeah, so the day of, I was like, don't forget it's tonight. And then we realized we were too late to get in. So he got into the June one, but yes, it was Steve and I signed up for the session. So I guess,
coincidentally, I listened to a lot of podcasts. I spent a lot of time with the podcast while I'm doing other work, what have you. And just by coincidence, I happened to hear the podcast you did with Lynn about her journey. And it was almost at exactly the same time that Mary Rose had signed us up for this Sash Bear evening talk. And so I started listening to your podcast. So it was one of those things where everything came together.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. Sometimes things just work out like that. Right. And I'm pretty sure Connor signed up for like every Super Feeler session we have going forward. So
I think he has.
He's an all-in kind of guy.
He is an all-in kind of guy.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, that and like, just, it sounds like you've done a lot of education for yourselves about what BPD is, what ADHD is, how you can support. And I think that's probably incredibly important for his life and yours as well, right? To just like understand what's going on. You did mention earlier about reading books about borderline. And I wonder, how that was for you, because there's a lot of books out there that are pretty horrible about borderline.
Well, I've already decided I'm not going to read Walking on Eggs.
Yeah, well, there's that.
We listened. We were driving back from Quebec listening to a couple of your podcasts just to see what the format was.
Gabor Mate from BC. Yeah.
We've read a lot more on probably addiction and ADHD than borderline, but there were a couple of books that were recommended to us by the doctor that Connor mentioned, the psychiatrist he was seeing for a while at CAMH. And I'm trying to remember what they were, but they were pretty old and pretty dated. And I have to admit, we're probably due to look into some more current research because it's been a while, to be honest. It was right in the beginning, probably when Connor was first diagnosed.
The librarian has pulled out his stack of books.
The librarian has pulled out his stack of books. But yes, I didn't find any of the ones on borderline specifically actually all that helpful, to be quite honest. Probably some of the books that we've read through Hope have been more helpful, like Journey of the Heroic Parent is one that comes to mind. And there's a couple of others, but that one is a very good one for parents.
Okay, again, that's good to know. Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes as well, because people are always looking for resources.
Yeah, I don't think it's in print anymore, but there is a downloadable e-version, Journey of the Heroic Parent.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
E-versions are helpful.
Which is really all about, again, it's the same. It's about validation. It's about boundary setting. It's about, all of that stuff. There's a similar, I think, thread that works through most of the good programs, the ones that actually work, like DBT and the Hope Values as well. We have our own kind of binder and collection of mantras that are helpful in certain situations.
You know, I tend to pick and choose when I'm reading a book, and I tend to skim them too. I tend to pick a chapter here and chapter there, what have you, but it's got to resonate with me. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, or that feels right to me. And it doesn't, I just dismiss it, because it doesn't fit my circumstances, my situation, so I'm reading specific to me.
Mm-hmm. Totally, as you should, right? Otherwise, you're just kind of trying to force things on yourself that aren't necessarily of value. So what is something that, I think I'll go through each of you on this one, and I'm going to start with Mary Rose, just a heads up. What is something that you would want other parents to know about how they can be good supports for their child going through BPD?
I guess the one thing that I learned with Connor, and he mentioned it too, is that you can't take anything personally, really, because in the moment, you can say and he can say some of the most horrible things. And I learned very young with Connor that, and he did allude to it 15 minutes later. He'd honestly forgotten what he said. He probably even forgot that it happened. I found that very hard when he was young, and it happens less now, I would say, as he's gotten older. But yeah, you just have to don't take anything personally, because it's really not about you. It's about those overwhelming feelings that in the moment they just can't see past. And I guess on that same thread, never talk about anything when your child is dysregulated. You cannot address anything when they're in that state. It's a useless conversation, and it's often damaging rather than helpful. So as much as you want to blah 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 and tell them, all of your wisdom, that's not the way it works. Especially probably doesn't work with any teenager or child, but it particularly does not work with BPD kids.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, they're just trying to survive at that moment, and having a conversation is not helping survival. That's really well said. Steve, how about yourself?
Well, Mary Rose picked a really big one. You know, when Connor's dysregulated, it's very hard to remind yourself that it's not about you. It's anger, and you just happen to be in the way of it. Or it's frustration, or it's sadness, or it's whatever.
Shame sometimes.
I should say it could also be joy, it could be ecstasy, it could be all kinds of things that are positives as well. But I think one of the people that I've had the opportunity to work with says, not my circus, not my monkeys. And there's two sides to that. First of all, that gives you the permission to walk away from a situation because you're not the cause of it, you're not the solution for it, and it really isn't about you. You just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But also, if I could back up, I spent so much of my time trying to save Connor from pain and trying to gloss things over and trying to normalize things for him. That what I did was I stole opportunities for him to learn how to manage it on his own. And if I could back up, I wish I had more of an arm's length approach. And sometimes it's impossible. I mean, if he's in danger or if someone else is in danger or you have to intervene. But Connor is a much richer, more mature person because he's dealing with his own problems. And in my mistaken view of trying to make his life easier and fix things for him, I believe that I took away some of those learning opportunities. And I wish I could back it, but I can't. So I don't regret it. It's just the way it is. Yep. But I think I'm a little bit better at it now.
So radical acceptance.
You know, when he's got an emergency, he calls me.
Yep.
And I grab my tools and go and fix it. But I'm getting better. I'm getting better at it. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, and that's all we can hope for, right? Is improving over time. And I love that you're not like sticking with the potential, like, oh, I could have done better. And that guilt and shame that can come with like, well, why didn't I know this before? Well, you don't know what you don't know. So all you can do is do the best you can in the moment and continuously grow as a human, which obviously you all have done. And so has Connor. Duncan, how about yourself? What would you want a sibling to know about what it's like to live with somebody with borderline or support them?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know much about the parenting aspect of it because I've never really parented my brother. That's actually something that my parents have done a very good job of, is kind of removing me from that. Like, I'm no authority figure in his life. I've just, and they give me all sorts of credit. I have not done any level of the research that these people have done. The only thing I've ever done for Connor is just be his friend. And to be honest, sometimes that's just enough. Like, sometimes with my message here is like, I'd kind of like, sometimes BPD people, they glom onto people and they're not always the most obviously savory people. And a lot of parents will look at that person and be like, oh, that person's a loser. You know, like my kid shouldn't be hanging around with that kid. But there might be something to that person that you don't see. It's, there are things about BPD that, like, again, on paper can be very difficult to love. But, you know, it could be that other person is just the same. So, like, my message to parents would be, like, try to help them cultivate those relationships with other people, other kids, siblings, cousins, whatever it is. Because, yeah, I don't know. That's my ending statement, I think.
That's a fantastic one. And I love my last question was going to be in kind of Connor's hope of the last episode that we did with him about what the best thing about BPD is from your perspectives. And Dunk, you've already said that part of that is he is the best friend that you could possibly have and will love you more than anybody in the entire universe. So I'm wondering, Steve, do you have your, what do you love about Connor's BPD.
Boy. You know, he's emotionally honest. Like what comes out of Connor is what comes out of Connor. And sometimes that may be painful for me to see, and sometimes that may be joyous for me to see. But, you know, what comes out of Connor is raw, but it's also honest. And so that's, and I don't, you can say that about many people. You know, we wear so many faces and we put up so many barriers because that's what society demands, that's what have you. But when you're seeing Connor, you're seeing the real deal. So there you go.
That's awesome. And Mary Rose, how about yourself?
Yeah, that's I would say the same. I mean, if I'm sick, Steve hates to be sick. And he doesn't do well with other people that are sick either. He's a wonderful guy, don't get me wrong, but if there's somebody I wanted by my side when I'm not feeling well, Connor will go to the ends there to look after you. And, you know, he isn't always the most thoughtful person, but he cares. He cares deeply. And I would say that's probably his one trait that I most admire.
Beautiful. Loyalty, genuineness, sounds like themes here. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show. Having your perspectives has been really beautiful to witness, and just Connor's excitement about you coming on and sharing your story, especially when he's not here. That's kind of scary, right? To know three people are talking about you behind your back. And he totally trusted that you would do it in a way that was respectful and honest. And, you know, I wish a loving family like you on all of our listeners.
I don't think there's too many secrets. We are always been pretty honest. I don't think there's anything we've said today that we haven't said to Connor's face in one way or another. So, or discussed with him at some level. So that's something I think we all subscribe to.
That's excellent. Dunk, last word.
Yeah, he kind of just dropped the mic and left. You know, you got to have some level of faith in us, hey? We're out here trashing him for an hour. He's just like,
he also knows himself. I was actually waiting with bated breath to see whether he could actually listen and not jump in for an hour. That might have been the ultimate test.
I've only talked to him for 2 hours of my life. I would put all of my money on the fact that that was not going to happen.
Which I think is why he's not here, because he knows himself.
We really like your podcast, and I think the work you're doing is really important, so thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm so glad we were able to connect, and hopefully we run into each other in the future.
I hope so.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline, and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.